Fan Morning Show, 4759 of the Fan. I'm JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. I watched the latest episode of Winning Time yesterday. I watched it during the day after the show, and I thought, what perfect timing for this episode to come out with the way that Boston versus Kyrie is playing out, that they have the Welcome to Boston put into the television show. And I go, everybody is probably feeling like Jerry West, where they're pissed off at the way they're being portrayed. I don't know if the city of Boston is. I think that they're probably pretty good with that portrayal in the show so far. Let's ask Lou Merlone, former MLB infielder, co-host of Merlone and Faria on WEI in Boston, NBC Sports Boston baseball analyst. Good morning, Lou. How are we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. So, listen, we're going to get into the baseball teams, and we got to talk about this matchup. But First, I got to talk Kyrie versus Boston, right? Like, this guy has to go up in the pantheon of most hated. Like, again, I'm watching that Winning Time doc, and it's everybody hating on Magic Johnson, right? They're like, boo, Magic, boo. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm sure there was some animosity for Magic back in the Garden in the day. Kyrie feels like a totally different level when it comes to modern-day baseball players. Like, who do we even equate this to? Like, is this an A-Rod? This feels beyond A-Rod. Where are we at with Boston versus Kyrie?
Yeah, it's a different level. It's not even A-Rod, you know, in my mind. I mean, and you know, listen, Kyrie's a different animal. He is outstanding at what he does for a living. It's just, I mean, it goes back to, you know, a big trade by Danny Ainge, thinking, okay, this is the team they're going to put together. They're going to make a run. They got Kyrie Irving. You know, in a contract year, he's announcing to the crowd that he's coming back. You know, so everyone's like, all right, let's make a run. And as the year went on, you know, now you catch him talking to Kevin Durant, the All-Star game, about two max spots. And it was like, wait, what's going on? And then it just sort of vanished. You know, he took off, and that's when things sort of soured. And that's why he is the ultimate villain right now in Boston. I think it's awesome. I'm not offended by any means of him flipping anybody off. I think it adds to it, and I'm all for it. I hope they scream louder. I hope he comes and double birds everybody when he gets introduced. I think it's just good theater.
I do, too. I think it's awesome. I've loved every second of it. I find Kyrie to be pretty insufferable myself, like, as a guy. It's funny because he's one of my favorite basketball players to watch ever. Like, this little guy who can play down in the paint and who has this balance and this shot and this touch. And then every time he picks up a microphone, I'm like, oh, my God, this guy, why? And yet I loved what he had to say, where he's like, I'm going to give it back. They want to give it to me. I'm going to give it back. And the back and forth between him and the market, it makes me feel like Boston is special. Like, the Celtics fans have that special aura where there's just that different level of we can get a rise out of somebody, but then there's also the player that's coming through and performing right now, and Kyrie did that. Like, he backed it up, and I cannot wait to see how it plays out tonight. I think it's the most fascinating subplot of this entire postseason right now, if I'm being dead honest, and I thought it would be Kyrie versus Tatum. But yeah, do you feel confident in them as a basketball team right now, though? Because I just made the case about the Brooklyn felt like they should have gotten the break speed off of them after the game that Kevin Durant just had, and they squeaked one out. Like, they end up with a buzzer beater to win that game. What's the confidence from, like, the basketball standpoint in the Celtics right now?
Well, you know, it was funny because down the stretch, it's about seeding and who do you want to play, and nobody wanted a two seed to play Brooklyn. And then all of a sudden, the Celtics kind of fell into it, or they so-called wanted it, and all of a sudden, the fan base was like, yeah, this is the right path. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, no, it's not. You want to be on the other side of the bracket. You want Brooklyn to play the Bucks. You want the winner to play Philly. And you want to sit back and watch all these guys eliminate everybody. I'm not a fan of the series. I am for what we do for a living, right? Because the drama in the theater is fantastic. But, you know, you don't get, like, a bigger ring by taking a tougher path to a championship. You know, you don't get two banners. And to think about going through the Nets and then the Bucks, if you have to, and then eventually maybe the Heat or Philly or something like that, like, that's not the best way to go about it. So I felt this is going to be a seven-game series, a grind when you have two guys like Durant and Kyrie. Celtics fans, for some reason, still feel very confident, like they're just going to walk through the Nets after a buzzer-beating win, and I just don't think that way. I think this is going to be great basketball for seven games, which I think I'll enjoy. I still think the Celtics will win the series, but this is not the matchup that people should want.
Yeah. Again, we're talking to Lou Merlone, and I'm sure on, like, right now, our show off of basketball games, all we get is tweets and texts and calls about how the refs hate Raptors fans or how they hate the Raptors. And I'm sure that all yours are just like, I also hate Kyrie. You know, I also hate Kyrie. Everything is just solicit an opinion on a game from the fans and the audience. And that's probably what it's got to be. So the theme of today is basically going to be Boston versus people. I felt like coming into the season with the baseball teams that the Yankees get their Yankees press clippings, right? Like they're just in everybody's orbit. Yeah. The Rays get this, the respect of everyone, where we put, oh, the Rays are going to find a way. It doesn't matter who they lose. We don't care who their players are, because why even bother learning the names, because they're not going to be there a year from now. But we give them the respect of the organization. Boy, are they just the respected organization in baseball right now. The Blue Jays are new, and they've got young players that are, you know, very attractive players from even a marketing standpoint, a league-wide standpoint. So they get a ton of hype. Do you think that people slept on this Red Sox team, or they're kind of properly placed within this division's narratives?
I think they're properly placed because, and one of the criticisms I have is, you know, last night in that baseball game, you saw the five pitchers that the Red Sox have right now in this roster. And Tanner Houck could go game three, and he's a good pitcher as well, but they just didn't do enough. And when I look at the Blue Jays like everybody else, I feel like they should be the favorites, you know, to win it. Hopefully they don't make me look bad again, you know, because I always feel like the Blue Jays are a team to worry about, especially last year. The Yankees, I was actually impressed with their arms, and I think Tampa's always has their respect. But the Red Sox, the lineup is fantastic. It hasn't really woken up yet at all. But the pitching, man, they're just sitting. It's almost like you're relying on a healthy Chris Sale and maybe even James Paxton midway through the year. And given what we've seen health-wise from Chris Sale, I think that is a huge gamble given the team you have and the situation you have with some of these contracts, meaning this could very well be the last year for some of these guys in this team.
Is there a thought in Boston that Eovaldi can get back to being that type of guy? You know, he's looked pretty good through a couple starts here. I know there's some optimism about Houck as well. But is there a path to this that isn't, well, Chris Sale's got to get healthy and be Chris Sale? Or is this like, are the Red Sox fans and the Red Sox going to be heading, you know, between now and August 2nd, got to add a starter?
Yeah, they don't have enough, in my opinion. I think Eovaldi has been great for them. For the last 2 or 3 years, he's been healthy after an injury-prone kind of career leading up to that. So you're banking on him being healthy, but, you know, Pivetta's in that two spot right now. He's not a number two. Tanner Houck is a guy that's coming into this league who's you know, very promising. There's just some inconsistencies there. And like Walker, Rich Hill, that just sort of – they're nice pitchers. They all have guys that can go out there and throw, but it seems like an every other outing type of staff, right? Like, those guys will have a great outing, and then they'll get hit around, you know, four innings, four or five runs. And then another good outing. And now, when I say good outing, I mean like four and a third, one or two runs, because that's what baseball is now for some reason. But I just don't feel like they have enough. And you saw their A bullpen yesterday. What you're going to see in the next day or the next two – is kind of what I'm talking about. Guys coming out of the pen, getting hit around a little bit. So it's going to be, well, they can make some trades. They can add some arms. Sales coming back. Maybe Paxton will help. So there's a lot of hope right now. But right now they're going to have to add some pitching. There's no question.
Paxton, that's like getting caught in that trap. That's a dangerous place to be, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, maybe Paxton. Yeah. It's like, we've been doing maybe Paxton now for a little too long. And he's Canadian. I watched him. I was live for the no-hitters.
We had a lot of time about that in Toronto, too. Paxton will want to come home.
That should be his name now, maybe Paxton. And again, I love the guy. He's done the show, and he pitched a no-hitter in front of my very eyes. But, yeah, if that's the strategy moving forward, I think that's your answer about adding starting pitchers. So he's in a slump right now, but you played 9 years in the bigs. I wonder if you remember seeing a guy like Bo Bichette, where he's just so comfortable going down 0-2 to the point where even yesterday he's just like taking the first two strikes, being like, I'm going to step off the plate for a second here, take the first strike. This is where I live, is 0-2.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. And, you know, Bo is such a great player. I actually play with his dad. And he's such a good player. But I feel like a lot of these guys sometimes get in this comfort zone. And Bogey's the same way. You know, like he'll just take strike one, and then he'll chase, and he'll be 0-2. And then he'll slap a hit the other way. And it's like, that's good. you know, that's real good, but rather than slapping it the other way, think of the damage you could have done in that first pitch. And I know his dad, like, well, I'm sure would like to see him attack pitches early on and teach us a good two-strike approach, but he's still a young hitter in this game, you know, and you still, you can continue to grow that third, fourth, fifth year in this league. So I think it's more than just setting up pitchers, being like, you know, the book is that he'll take the first pitch and then sometimes he'll ambush you. But I just feel like this pitching is so advanced now that you don't want to get to two strikes. There's so much power in the game that I'm not a big fan of letting anything go, personally. And he's such a good hitter that it's just a matter of time. And that's the beauty of 162. It's just a matter of time. Like, when a guy gets in a slump like he is right now, that saying is just someone's going to pay. Because when it comes, it's going to come in bunches.
So someone who hasn't been slumping is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I know he's young. Well, I know it's the one big season, and maybe it hasn't gotten to this level yet, but where is Vlad starting to rack up in terms of fear index of guys that you've seen in this division that, as a Boston guy, you don't want to see across the diamond in a big spot?
I mean, right now he's on top of the list. You know, I mean, he just steps in the box, and it's like, man, you better throw that perfect little slider on the down and low black, right? Like, you better do that. Or you better hope that he kind of jams himself and gets himself out somehow, because you cannot make a mistake versus him or he's going to kill you. I mean, it's just, there is this every time he steps up, there's this fear that he is going to hit a ball 600 feet. You know, and what he does at Fenway Park recently is scary as well. So he's one of the most dangerous hitters, the most feared hitters in the game. And I like watching him. I just wish it wasn't in the division going up against him all the time.
Yeah, he's been everything that we expected. In fact, like, I just saw Jeff Passan put out an article, like, I don't know, a few minutes ago, and the headline of it is Vlad Jr., the best hitter in baseball. And at this point, you're getting pretty close to, it's between him and Mike Trout. And if Vlad keeps going the way that he's going, I think that's a real conversation. And I can't believe that we're actually having it this early in his career, because he's 23 years old. So before I let you go, I did mention that Winning Time show on HBO. I don't know how much that actually hits your guys' radar, but yeah, they have basically painted the Celtics as the villains of the show, right? And obviously, because it's an LA show, it's a Hollywood show. But I am curious whether or not that actually has hit the radar of Boston, of just like, hey, every episode is like the way they're portraying Red Auerbach, the way that they're portraying Larry Bird, the way that they're portraying Boston as a city in general. Has this become a topic of discussion among sports fans in that city?
You know, I've watched all the episodes and I've enjoyed it.
Same.
And it really hasn't come up as far as topics go. Mm-hmm. But I think for the most part, like, Celtics fans look at it and they actually enjoy seeing Larry Bird and Red Auerbach treated that way. Like the stuff with Larry last week, just talking trash back and forth, you know, and he's got a dip in and everything. You're like, that's my man. You know, that's Larry. That's the legend. And then Auerbach being just arrogant and kind of like an a-hole a little bit, too. You know, you're sort of like, that's Red. So I think it's something that the more they portray it as villains, the more people will accept it and enjoy it.
I love it. I've loved every second of it. Although I do feel bad for Jerry West, and especially now that Jerry West has to come out and be like, this is an assassination of my character. I'm like, oof, this is tough. Like, maybe don't do the logo like this, where you've clowned him every single episode. And every single episode of the show, I go, they can't keep doing worse by Jerry, and somehow they do. Like, the latest one, he can't even get out of the limousine, and he's just sitting in there like a total loser. I'm like, boy, God, you guys make Jerry West look bad. Like, please, just give us one good Jerry West episode. Let Jerry look good. God, this is a tough one for him to take. Lou Merlone, former big leaguer, co-host of Merlone and Faria on WEI in Boston, baseball analyst for NBC Sports. Thanks for making time, buddy. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, man. Always enjoy it. Have a good day.
Take care, pal. I'm not going to do any spoilers for this Winning Time series, because I know a lot of people don't watch at the moment. I know Blake is saving it for when there's no basketball stuff. It's my only show that I'm watching right now where I'm actually keeping up to date with it. It's basically my, oh, right, I forgot this show came out this week, the new episode. One of the days of the week, so I end up watching it during the day. It's unbelievably entertaining. The actor that plays Magic Johnson and the actor that play Kareem are doing a phenomenal – those two guys are crushing it. The story is fun, and it's an enjoyable look. And if you're a basketball nerd like me who's read a million books on this era of basketball and who grew up with, like, the Celtic pride stuff because my parents were big Celtics fans, It's a really, really fun series. But yes, I love Jerry West. He has my favorite sports biography that I've ever read. My favorite one. And the way they do him in this series is painful to watch at times. Like, he is truly the... I think that he did something to the showrunners. Like, whoever wrote this show had a bad interaction with Jerry West once, and they just decided, we're going to destroy this guy. Like, episode to episode to episode, it gets worse for Jerry West. It's unbelievable.
If you are like JD and you enjoy reading about this era of basketball, When the Game Was Ours by Jackie Mack is a must read as well. It's It focuses primarily on the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson element of the league around that time. It gets into a lot of the stuff that, from what I've read and what you've told me, JD, the series touches on as well in terms of the racial dynamics and the contrast and how players are presented. It also, it goes really into the friendship underneath the rivalry between them in a way that I'm not sure if the show has done that yet, or maybe the timing just doesn't line up. But it's very great read. If you're
it's one of my favorite books. It's on my shelf that's behind me in the Zoom. I think two down from the far left.
I can't see it that clear. You gotta get a higher depth camera,
you'll just have to believe me that it's there. But yes, it's actually a book that I've read twice. It's that good.
One of my favorite books, Chasing a Dream, the Carl English story as told by Blake Murphy. Also another great basketball book if you're looking to stock your shelves.
That's true.
All these names that we've referenced, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Jerry West, you got to mention Carl English amongst those names as well. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, they're all there, like all together in one way or another. Before we take the break, before we move on, why did we even put this in the doc? I like how there's an actual thing, like it's a non-ad read. I've never seen that before in our workspace.
Do not make up an ad
read. It's like, no, don't put anything in there. If there's nothing to give away, don't put anything in there. We're not going to read the thing.
We've already gave away all the Leafs tickets. If you've been lucky
enough, I'm like Ron
Burgundy.
If you put the reads in front of me, I'm going to read it. So yes, no more Leafs tickets to give away. That's actually the news. That's the update. Boy, that was kind of sad. We have no more Leafs tickets to give away to any of you.
But we've away picks. That's good enough.
I don't think it's that sad, because what that tells me is that we're almost there.
Yes.
Right? 77 games of saying, well, it doesn't really matter that much until the playoffs. We'll see in the playoffs. Everything's building to the playoffs. Five Leaf games away.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what is amazing about that, though, is like there was a season with that with the Raptors, right? There was the final DeMar season. It really was.
2018.
Yeah. 2018 was the most inconsequential regular season in the history of basketball. Like, it was so.
They could have gone 82-0.
Yeah. Didn't matter.
And everyone would have been like, haha, it's going to be hilarious when you lose in four to the Cavs.
Couldn't have mattered less. But the Leafs are a different team in terms of the way that they're covered and the anxieties of the fan bases. And it's funny that we came into this year where I still remember all the pregame shows of everyone going, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about? What are people going to talk about with this Leafs team? Nobody's going to care during the regular season. And lo and behold, here we are right now, right? Where it's like, it's felt all season long as though there have been a billion things to talk about Leafs, and everything has mattered so much, down to the who's the fourth liner as always, who's the seventh defenseman as always, how's the goaltending as always, Austin Matthews' goal pursuit still feels special as always, Mitch Marner debates as always, Nylander debates as always, all of it has mattered. Leaf bingo card has been hit, completed, touched, everything.
Just, if you're a Leaf fan, be very, very thankful that they've already set the franchise record for wins, the franchise record for points. They're going to lock up franchise record for points percentage, because you know what that 2018 year from the Raptors tells us? If you chase meaningless regular season things, karma, basketball karma or sports karma will get you. The Raptors really wanted to be able to say they won 60 games for the first time that year.
And
Fred VanVleet got hurt in game 82 against the Heat in a game the Raptors didn't need. I know. I'm just saying, you don't...
Bad vibes.
I like how Ailish is blaming Blake for this. Like, pay attention.
That doesn't need to be put in the air.
I didn't set an illegal screen on Fred VanVleet. No, I'm saying the Leafs have done the right things. They got all those things out of the way early. Austin, like we talked about earlier, Austin Matthews is taking the right approach, and they're taking the right approach with Austin Matthews of, 60 goals isn't that big a deal, or 65 or whatever. And they got all the big records, Rick 5, wins, points, all that stuff. It's done. It's done. You've got five games to just bubble wrap and focus on. We got to be in the playoffs in the best shape possible. So they learned the lesson of the 20. Look, these front offices they're not separate. Like, they all work for the same company. Bobby Webster and Kyle Dubas probably talk about this stuff.
Bobby's probably like,
hey, man, Don't you dare play Austin Matthews. If Bobby Webster knows who Austin Matthews is, I don't know if Bobby's a hockey guy at all.
Ailish, if you're going to keep your self-proclaimed title of vibes coordinator, you got to know when Blake is actually putting a positive vibes thing out there, which is where that thing was going. You preemptively tried to bad vibes him on a good vibes. That's tough luck. That's tough luck for vibes coordinator. I'm just saying.
Isn't that the story of this show?
That's usually when people start to do the investigations into, like, how did Ailish Forfar get the position of vibes coordinator? How much does it pay? Now you got, you know, your deep throats doing the dirty work behind the scenes trying to figure out what is happening.
Ailish is not going to understand that reference.
Based
on the look on her face.
Yeah, I don't think that she understood that reference whatsoever. It's a Watergate. That's who the Watergate scandal, you know what that is?
I do know that one.
Okay, I blame the Watergate guys. You could have picked a better code name, but you were trying to be... You knew you'd be a historical figure in movies and references.
I don't think the Watergate guy knew. How can I mess
with everyone? What's the stupidest code name I could pick?
Yeah, no, I just love the idea of him.
You're like they didn't have texting then, but he's like texting. Mm-hmm. What do I call you? LOL, deep throat.
Yeah, I like to think about it more as like that they didn't think historically it would turn out the way that if you said it, that Ailish would feel like or look like she was about to fall out of her chair. Let's take a break.
Yeah, please.
Let's bring in David Jacoby, co-host of Jalen Jacoby on ESPN. Find out what his biggest question is from a Raptor standpoint heading into tonight and whether or not there's more or less pressure on a Sixers team that's up 2-0. That's next. David Jacoby, it's the Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. JD Blake and Ailish. Final block of the show, final block of the 4 hours. Big Raptors game tonight, in case you hadn't heard. 8 o'clock start. Disrespectful to Raptors fans, by the way. 8 o'clock start. That's a rude one in the middle of the week. I just got to tell you, that's rude, don't you think?
This is the double rude because when we're down to, after we pivot off of 4 game days to 3 game days, the 8 o'clock slot also means you're the NBA TV slot. So obviously in this case, it's excellent because it means you get Kevin Calabro. We got legendary Canadian Nabil Kareem on as part of the broadcast team as well. But yeah, it's the double disrespect, the NBA TV and the bad time slot.
It's the double disrespect. This is a double D. I agree. It is the double disrespect. I got to tell you, like, who in this country has NBA TV Canada? Like, who has that channel? Of course you do. I'm saying that amongst the normies, who is paying for that extra channel? Like, every time I'm like, right, this channel. This is the time of year where I'm reminded that you have to pay extra for it. Outrageous. I got to pay extra to watch Dallas Mavericks and Utah Jazz? You should be thanking me for watching Dallas Mavericks, Utah Jazz. Not charging me. I should charge you. Okay? NBA TV, make it free for everyone. Open it up for the people. Outrageously stupid idea that's a pay channel. You know what could be a pay channel? It's watching our next guest show. You could easily charge for it. It's David Jacoby, co-host of Jalen Jacoby on ESPN. How are we doing, Jacoby? Good morning.
What's happening, JD? Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, do you trust the Sixers now?
No, I don't. But if I was in Toronto, I would be concerned.
Yeah.
I do not trust the Sixers. I think they got a brilliant maxi game in game one. Embiid hasn't been the Embiid we've seen from regular season. And James Harden, I don't know what version. I've seen 17 different versions of James Harden in the last 24 months. So I don't even know. Yeah. I don't know anything about James Harden.
Dude, the James Harden question is so fascinating to me because people – I've had takes of people going, I don't think James Harden's been that good in this series, to, oh, my God, James Harden's been controlling these games on a string in this series. Where are you at with just Harden so far and meeting the expectations of the moment?
It's a great recognition of the spectrum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we all hold on to the James Harden Houston, the James Harden with Daryl Morey, that basketball love triangle between the ball and the two of them. And D'Antoni is just like, he was the most unique, effective offensive weapon I've ever seen. He could get his shoulder past anybody. He could, the step back three was like a layup to him for a while there, even though the numbers didn't say that, it felt that way. But that's just not him anymore. And I think they need bigger games from Embiid and real contributions from Maxey and role players. And he's kind of like he's a different version, but still a great guard and someone who's a threat in a 7-game series.
You know, I agree with what you just said. And I also agree that I just think we've all made up our minds about Harden. Like, we're already in the camp of, we think this guy is going to choke it for them. And when he's not playing at an undeniable level for that Sixers team, we're going to see the things that we want to see. And if you're a Harden believer, you're going to put extra emphasis into, oh, well, he didn't get assists for the plays where he hits Embiid and he gets fouled. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess. I guess so. But this is a guy that Morey called the greatest scorer in NBA history. And some people tried to back that up. And I got to tell you right now, and how old's Harden? Like 31? He's not that old. Like, he's 31, somewhere in that range. Let's just put it this way. I don't think the greatest score in NBA history would have your co-host saying that his box scores look like concert dates.
No, which was a great fit, by the way.
It's honestly one of the greatest things I've ever heard. It was when you heard it, did you go, oh my God, like that's got to be a holy crap, I can't, what did you just say? Like, we got to write that down. We got to get the social team on that one.
It was too good. And I was just like, that can't be yours. You know what I mean? It can't be yours.
Yeah.
I mean, because there are these sort of like sayings that go through locker rooms that don't make it to microphones. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sort of amongst NBA players, they say to each other. But that it was a great bit. And I think that he made it up. And again, like, the Harden is an enigma. I mean, even when he was the best Harden that he ever was, he still had these sort of like playoff flops. But sometimes he'll have games or individual possessions where you're just like, well, how do you stop that? I have no idea how that works. But I think the way that this particular Sixers team is constructed, which I know you're very familiar with, is they don't really need Houston 36, 15, and 12 James Harden to be successful, especially in this Eastern Conference and especially against a depleted Raptors roster.
And that's one of my biggest questions for the Raptors tonight from a defensive standpoint is, obviously you can't change much what you're doing with Joel Embiid. He's Joel Embiid. There's no good strategy. You have to throw lots of guys at him. Tyrese Maxey's been awesome as that kind of tertiary guy. But I do wonder if the Raptors change it up a little bit and dare Harden to be that 30, 35-point Harden as a means of shutting the tap off for kickouts to Maxey, kickouts to Harris, freeing up a defender because you're not doubling Harden and stuff. If the Raptors were to do that, what's your confidence level that Harden can throw it back to that version of himself for a night?
I mean, listen, it's a great strategy. It's something that I would try, and it just to see where Harden is at. Try it early in the game. You don't have to commit to a defensive philosophy for the entirety of a game, but that's something that I would definitely test. Because, like, one of the things I love about the Raptors, and again, without Young and Barnes, it gets trickier, but I just love that everyone 6'5 to 6'8 can switch, is energy, and they're on a string defensively, they communicate, and it's great. But that's also one of the things I don't love about the Raptors in this series, is everyone 6'8 to 6'5, and they have a lot of energy, they communicate, they're on a string, because you have that problem with Joel Embiid in the middle. And I think that using a swarm around Embiid in the interior and some of the more threatening outside shooters, and giving a little more cushion. I can't believe I'm saying this to someone who was, you know, the MVP 4 years ago, but in, you know, shoots just a lights out from three, is giving a little more cushion to James Harden and saying, listen, you got to score 30. You have to score 30 to get this win.
Okay, so you said maybe the Raptors might be a little bit nervous coming into tonight, just how the Sixers have shown. So what's your biggest question for the Toronto Raptors coming tonight? What do you need to see out of that lineup? And if it's not Pascal Siakam, I don't know who it would be.
Fred VanVleet. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that Pascal Siakam will have flashes, and you guys obviously know him more intimately than I do, and we've watched more of him from me. But like, sometimes like, oh, this is the future of the NBA. He's the exact prototype. We should just clone him, and that's the future of basketball. And then other times you're like, I don't know, the jumper doesn't look great. He's kind of like fading away on these little runners, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't with him. But Fred VanVleet is so consistent. He's so great defensively, and he can score, and he can get the team going, and you guys know exactly what he does for this team. And like, he's a capable scorer as well. He can put up 30 to 40 points. And I think that if I'm the Raptors, you look for the home crowd, you look for that, you look for defense, and I would expect the Raptors to win game 3.
You expect him to win game three. Okay, well, I mean, you're going to have to get a good Fred then. Because, like, he was brilliant in that first quarter of the last game. The Raptors hung around. But then he scores 6 points the rest of the way, and they get blown out. So I'm with you. They need a better Fred. And I do think that this is going to be a bit of a tilt or a pivot moment for him, where if he performs well, he kind of keeps his status as this unquestioned playoff performer, which he was for this team in the past and the leader of this team. But yeah, I still think he's going to have to be great. You got to counter Joel Embiid by having guys play well on the outside. We saw it last year with Trae Young in the Hawks series. And yeah, so far, I don't know where you'd rank Fred VanVleet in the series in terms of best players, but it's not one, it's not two, it's not three, it's not four. It's like you got to keep going down the list. He hasn't been better than Tyrese Maxey. And I wonder if you think that this guy is now legitimately a star in the league.
Cool. It's hard to say, you know, there's levels, there's tiers, right? Certainly not superstar. I think star is tricky, but for someone who's in his second year, was in Kentucky, he was kind of like with Quickly, they're both kind of the same player on the same team, so he didn't shine the way he should in college. Last year showed some flashes, but this year he's been very consistent. So I'm not going to call him a star in the league because, you know, I reserve that for all-stars or people that you can kind of build a franchise around. But he's trending in a really good direction. You know, he's trending in a really good direction. Like, you see that. You've seen this playoffs. You've seen the Jordan Poole leap and, you know, the Maxey leap early. And then you see the job leap, which is like a year or two advanced. So I'm like, I see a lot of potential, but I see star potential, but not a star.
So we got to ask you this before we move on to a question about the other series. But so refs are a big point of discussion here. And the free throw disparity, in my opinion, is kind of what it should be when you're facing Embiid and Harden and a team that puts way more pressure on the rim than the Raptors. But it culminates with this moment where Nick Nurse and Joel Embiid have a little bit of a chat. And then Embiid goes to the podium and says, in front of Danny Green, Nurse's former player, he cracks him up with, "We need him to stop bitching about the foul calls." Do you think that Nurse is justified in his bitching, or that is exactly just what he's doing?
It's not that binary, but I do feel that what you said to set this up is really what the crux of this is James Harden, Joel Embiid tie their sneakers and say, "I need to go to the line 10 times, right?" Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Raptors, no one does that. And there's going to be a natural disparity there. However, when you watch the games and don't just look at the numbers, Joel Embiid is like two things. Joel Embiid is just big and huge, and he's looking for contact. He wants to bump into you on his way to the basket to maybe get a call, and you're actually not even going to bother him that much, especially if you don't have large, strong bodies like the Raptors. That's one of the ways that he gets his calls. I think some of those could be no calls, right? I think that's fair to say. Some of those can just go. Like, if the offensive player creates the contact the way Joel does, that's one thing. Now, James Harden is just going to fool you in the fouling, and he's been doing it for 5 years, and it works. So I would say that some of those Embiid calls could be no calls, but a lot of those James calls is Nick Nurse should probably be talking to his team and showing them film instead of talking to the refs and complaining. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense, and feel similarly on this end. So we've teed up in what's at stake here, where, you know, you need to see a little bit more from Siakam if he's a true star. And James Harden is maybe at the end of his, you know, elite superstar era. Maybe Tyrese Maxey's on the move. I look out to the Western Conference. I watched a game last night that wasn't nearly as good as game one, but that Timberwolves-Grizzlies series to me is fascinating from a star-building standpoint. Because we get this incredible game one where Anthony Edwards and Ja Morant are going back and forth for 30 pieces. And we're getting the families of these teams involved in the broadcasts. And then, yeah, it's a little lopsided last night by the end. But in the first half, that's a really competitive game and another good Ja-Anthony Edwards battle. How good do you think something like this is for the league, where these are two teams that, you know, maybe don't get the same national attention, and it's probably the one of the lesser watched playoff series, but every time you tune in, you have these two very, very likable young guards kind of going toe-to-toe like this, and they're both so personable.
I mean, you make a good point at the end, specifically. Let's talk about what happens on the court, right? Ja Morant felt like he had 48 points last night. and 15 assists, right? But he just, it gets an extremely loud 23. Like, when I actually saw the 23 points, I was like, is that the first half? Because what he does just pops off the screen and punches you in the face. Like he can make a drive through the lane just look like poetry, like Shakespeare. And just the look and the energy and the home crowd getting into it. And what Anthony Edwards did on the court in game one was, he's got the step back three game. He can play make a little bit, but he'll also dunk all over you. But what really you hit on to me is the personalities. You know, it's like, it's Anthony Edwards after the game saying the kids were talking trash to him, smiling about it. We've all seen the dozen Anthony Edwards quotes. He's one of the best quotes in sports right now. And Ja Morant just seems so likable. And you mentioned their fathers getting involved. Like, this is a great star-building series because in this sport in particular, unlike, let's say, football, is we want to know the people. We want to know the personalities. We want to know the drama. We want to know the relationships and the sort of like the way that everybody interacts with each other. And this Memphis team feels kind of like a college team. They love each other so much. When Ja scores 50, they all pose for the cameras. Like, those two teams in particular and the personalities on them are really, really good for the league. And hopefully we can see that team not lose in the second round, which looks almost inevitable at this point.
I think it's good for the league because how could it not be, right? For all the reasons that you and Blake just outlined. But I think that those of us that are unbelievably immersed in this, the basketball dorks, we think it's a bigger deal than it is. Like, I don't know if the casual NBA fan is getting NBA TV games and watching Minnesota and Memphis. And this is where I actually think that market matters, because we've done this thing over the last couple of years where we go, markets don't matter as much. You can play anywhere and be a superstar. Yeah, you can if you're Kevin Durant. If you're a 7-foot scorer that likes we've never seen before and you play in Oklahoma City and you go to a finals right away and you play LeBron and the league feels like it's an inevitability for you to win, then yeah, then market doesn't really matter. But this is where I think it does, is I don't think people care about these dudes yet. And if they do something special, then we'll start to care. And if they go deep in playoff runs and we start to learn them by force, we will. But I actually think that we're still a far ways removed from these guys actually being truly national needle movers.
You make an interesting point, because you think about it like a graph. Like, the x-axis is time and the y-axis is stardom or Q-score, whatever you want to call it. And I think the people that are the highest on the y-axis are the LeBrons and the KDs and,
yes,
and those stars. But was LeBron in the MVP conversation? Was Kevin Durant in the MVP conversation? And wasn't even in the play-in, and one was in the play-in. And then you think about the x-axis, is it kind of takes time for casual audiences to catch up. You know what I mean? People that live it like we do are kind of a couple seasons ahead. So I believe that the people that we're discussing right now, Anthony Edwards and Ja Morant, are so early on the x-axis. They're so early in their career and so showing such great potential that it's not happening now, right? But they don't have their signature Nike shoes and all those things and sort of the commercials. But I think that in a couple seasons, if, you know, barring injuries and assuming they perform the way they do this, we've given no indication they won't, that the rest, it will catch up. We're just a little ahead of that, saying, where is everybody else?
Yeah. And like I said, I'll believe it a little bit more when I see it, because it's like, in my lifetime, there's been one star in Minnesota, and it was KG. And a lot of that is that it didn't really work out, but that you could sell on a national audience. It was Kevin Garnett. And even then, it was like, okay, Starbury was happening at the same time, and it was those two guys on the come up together. And then Memphis, they've had all these competitive teams. They've never had a player quite like Ja, but I don't know. I'm not sure people are going to watch Memphis games until that guy goes to, finals. But, yeah, your point is correct in that it's going to take time, and we get to be the music nerds who get to say, we were into Ja Morant before it was cool to be into Ja Morant. That's the piece that we end up actually getting.
Can you even pick Ja Morant's dad out of a lineup?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, just look for Usher.
Yeah.
Is all we all learn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dude, he looks so much like him. So the thing that people are caught up on, because we've had time, we've had space, we've had stardom, we've had LeBron, the y-axis, the market culmination is Kyrie in Boston, right? What do you want to see tonight? Like, what do you think we're going to see tonight?
Oh, God. That's such a tough one to call.
Can it get bigger than that last game? Can it actually get bigger?
I that felt like a game seven. That felt like a finals game. The crowd energy, the back and forth basketball, the highlights, the shot making. The shot making to me was crazy. The physicality, it felt very playoffs. Like it was just like they're the first half was like a wrestling match, and then the second half was just like, you know, it's cliche, but like heavyweight fighters going back and forth. I don't know what to expect. You know, I expect more from Kevin Durant. That's one thing. You know what? I think that'll be my answer right there. Like, I think we're getting 35 from Kevin Durant. You know, I don't think number seven is going to let them push him around again. I'm sure that the Brooklyn front office has been writing a lot of emails to the league office about the way that Kevin Durant was handled, especially in the first half and the way they established that. So I think that you'll get a Kevin Durant and a Kyrie combined effort that gets them the winning game too. That's what I expect to see tonight.
Expect a better Kevin Durant. Always expect a great appearance from David Jacoby. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
See you, pal.
David Jacoby, co-host of Jalen Jacoby on ESPN.
Boy, tonight is a... I always say I don't watch two screens when I'm trying to really pay attention to something because I find it... I usually record and watch later, blah, 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 blah. I'm more prone to throw a Blue Jays game up as a secondary screen because it's easier to pay attention, but I love listening to Dan call a game, and so it's hard. It's still hard for me. I don't know what I'm going to do tonight with Celtics and Kyrie happening at the same time as this pivotal. Like, the Raptors season's on the line, but there's Kyrie in Boston. It's awful. Like, why did these two games need to be lined up? This is a horrible situation for me. Like, horrible situation for me. I think I have to violate the rule. I think I have to have the two screens. I think I'm going to have to record the Raptors and rewatch parts of it, because it's just like, you're telling me that if the fourth quarter in that Celtics-Brooklyn game is anything close to what it was in the last one, that it's not going to distract you a little bit? Even the most hardcore Raptors fan who only cares about the Raptors, like, that's got to interest you a little, right? The Kyrie Irving versus Boston thing, I think, transcends the casual, like, that goes into the casual I don't even care about sports fan stratosphere, where people know about that. Even if you don't care about sports, they go, what's up with Kyrie in Boston? Why do they hate each other so much?
Can you believe he flipped them off?
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
I loved all the
my pearls off.
The one where he puts his two hands behind his head and he's doing the taps on the back of his head is like, It's art. That's art.
It's
to me.
Revolutionary, because yeah. Every kid, like, maybe like early teen.
I wouldn't
but everyone,
say revolutionary. That's pretty much what every kid does.
Well, but I don't know if they've done it in that way before. Like, you can hide a middle finger to your buddy in a lot of different ways, but the lean back in class with middle fingers on the back of your head. That's I don't know. It's maybe not revolutionary, but it's a new wave for elite. Flipping your friends off at school. That's for sure.
It's an elite one, but I think that if there's been a long history of flipping the bird to people.
Look, and there's a lot of ways that I've flipped my friends off in class or whatever, but never the double. Like, you can obviously do the, oh, I'm going to scratch the back of my head and do it, but the double barreled is it's some good creativity.
Like the Ryan Hartman, Evander Kane situation last week where he flipped him the bird and then raised $20,000 for charity because people were sending him money on Venmo. Maybe that'll happen.
I don't think here's the problem for Kyrie, though. He got that fine. There's no real such thing as Brooklyn fans, and I think there are fewer people who are actually Kyrie fans. And
nobody
was sending him any money. Yeah, like, no one's giving him money. Because, again, I've said this a billion times. I've said it on today's show. If you asked me, hey, JD, what's the basketball player you would want to watch? There's a couple of different versions of it, but it's like, The type of guard that has perfect footwork offensively, who can hit step backs, but who can also create space underneath the basket at around 6 feet tall. Like, I'm enthralled by watching Kyrie. I would rather watch Kyrie than a guy like a Westbrook or a Ja who can just all of a sudden spring up and destroy the basket. Because that, to me, you go, oh, that makes sense because you're such an athletic freak. Of course you can get that off. Of course you can be able to do that. With Kyrie, he's obviously an athletic phenom, right? Like, there's no doubting his athleticism. But it's not the same way where it's like Derrick Rose or Ja Morant or Russell Westbrook type. To me, his is just work on the craft. That's his whole life in a gym. The ball handling with the footwork is, that's you can't match that with anything but time and dedication to the craft. It's why basketball players respect him so much. I adore his game. He is the number one guy in the league where I go, oh my God. Oh my God, he just did something that is beautiful. It's beautiful to me. And then every time again he cracks a mic, I go, I can't stand this guy. He's perfect. He's perfect for the league.
It's the beauty of DeMar's game too, right? Where it's like, hey, everything's been limitations, 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 and his whole career is, well, I have the artistry and the work ethic to overcome those limitations.
But DeMar's also an athletic freak. Like, he fits the bill of close to the Durant thing, or sorry, the Derrick Rose thing, where it's like, DeMar's 6 foot six, 6 foot seven, and he can jump out of the gym. He's a dunk contest guy.
Right. He's also one of the greatest mid-range shooters in the history of the game. And a lot of that is because of footwork and his ability to get a shot off. But yes, Kyrie is high on the answer list. He has one of the best handles in the league, obviously deep range, all that creativity. The reason that the Brooklyn Nets are in a play-in game and they're still being talked about so much is because Kyrie is near the top of that list. If you were to poll a lot of basketball nerds, and Kevin Durant would be my number one because, yeah, he has some physical advantages as well. But this is a dude who was... If you took the entire, like, this is the NBA 75 season, the Diamond Jubilee or whatever you call it. If you were to take all the
Jubilee, yeah.
I don't know, whatever they call it.
I know, but that's good. I like that. We should throw our own Diamond Jubilee. I want to go to a Diamond Jubilee. Like, that sounds great. That sounds like something that the Great Gatsby would do.
If you were to take all the best scorers from that list and take little component parts from all their games, short of the physical dominance to just back someone down and get the free throw line, KD's got all of it, right? He's got the size, he's got the length, he's got the footwork, he's got the three-level shooting. So KD's near the top of the list for me, and this is why the Nets are so fascinating. And Boston's such a great foil for them because they're the best defensive team in the league. And even without Robert Williams, they just have like a parade of guys that can make life difficult for Kyrie and KD. And it's kind of this, obviously it's beautiful basketball anyway. And the fact that these teams don't like each other, the fan bases don't like Kyrie great, but it's also like a really interesting basketball philosophical. If you have the two most dynamic and maybe most difficult individual guys to guard in the league outside of the class of guys who just like physically overwhelm you, and the best defense, it's a movable object against irresistible force or whatever. But without the power element, it's just purely a basketball artistry element with Kyrie and KD.
It is.
Fun games tonight. All of that is to say, going to watch the first half, and I am going to try to hold off in PVR until after the Raptors game. I don't know how I'm going to juggle all that. I've got some pregame radio, too, and I don't know what they're doing with me postgame. It could be a late night over here. I got to get a nap in at some point.
Okay. All I know is that the game is on Sportsnet, all right? Game's on Sportsnet. You're going to find it, but it's a big one for the Raptors tonight. We're going to be watching. There's some pressure points on these players. It's a must-win game. It's a do-or-die game. I think that Raptors fans are going to be loud. I think the energy in the building is going to be great. I'm very curious to see what Nick Nurse does in terms of his adjustments. I think there's a case to be made for the strategy that Blake outlined tonight, but ultimately they're going to have to go out and create their own success, and once again that falls on their three guys, but more specifically to me the guy that has to show up is Fred. They need something from Fred tonight, and I hope Gary Trent Jr. is healthy. Raptors Sixers tonight, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet. We'll have your reactions tomorrow morning. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you leave a review for this podcast. It really does help us. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. See you tomorrow morning, hopefully after a Raptors win.